trouble. Thought over Kakashi. I cannot achieve. Maximum velocity. Digital heart racing. Multiplexing. Emulating.
You are listening to RFC New Soundwave. This is a spinoff of Radio Free Cybertron, the original Transformers Internet radio show, and maybe the world's first podcast. I'm your host, co-host, Brian Kilby. I am the founder and co-host of Radio Free Cybertron. With me, I have JD Church. Tell us about yourself, JD.
Hey, yeah, I'm also a co-host of Radio Free Cybertron, and yeah, I'm a geek.
Really?
That's what my wife says.
You co-host a Transformers podcast, and you may be a geek. That's fantastic.
Also
with us, we have XV.
I'm from figurereviews.com. I've been reviewing toys in text and audio for Radio Free Cybertron for almost 10 years.
Dear God.
I'm pretty sure I am a geek.
Yeah. Actually, you may have more geek cred than all of us put together. But a man here who would contend with that is Chris Triplett. Tell us about yourself, Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm also a geek, longtime comic fan, and I don't have any kind of shows or anything else.
If your comic fandom was a person, you could vote and drink alcohol.
You'd probably retire, actually.
You're only 30. But Chris is awesome. So this week we are going to get into a few things. Like I said, we are a spinoff of Radio Free Cybertron, the Transformers Internet radio show. We may hit on Transformers occasionally in the run of RFC New Soundwave. And RFC New Soundwave is, of course, a play on Transformers Headmasters. RFC New Soundwave delves into various bits of things that we are all interested in. Video games, comic books, science fiction, movies, toys, animation. I think we're going to be mostly comic book, animation, toy, and sci-fi heavy, but in this week's show, we go over several topics, including Star Trek, where it is, where it's going, the new movie, District 9, Batman Arkham Asylum for the Sony PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, DC's current big event, Blackest Night, as well as several other topics. Gentlemen, Star Trek, go.
Red Matter, what the hell?
Yeah, exactly. My problem with the new Star Trek movie, and we'll just start in with problem, right? Well, first of all, it was made by someone who kept saying they're not a Star Trek fan, and I think that was made pretty apparent by the film. But one of the things that disappointed me is that the major sort of MacGuffin of the film was a complete fabrication of a non-existent scientific principle thing. And one of the awesome things about Star Trek has always been its semi-scientific accuracy.
Semi-scientific.
We'll use that term loosely, I think.
Well, but there had always been a certain amount of legitimacy, a certain amount of this may be possible in some way.
So, except for Star Trek Voyager.
I take it that none of us are fans of the new Star Trek movie. It was wildly popular and hailed as probably the second best Star Trek movie after Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And why is no one here supporting this movie?
Well, I will come in and maybe I'll be the sound of positiveness for this movie, because I think that it would work if only they had changed a few things about it.
The ending.
Oh, yeah, definitely the ending, yeah.
Also maybe the story.
Yeah.
We can agree the actors are good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Chris Bones is awesome. I like the guy who played Bones.
Chris Pine was awesome as Captain Kirk.
And Zachary Quinto wasn't awful as Spock. He just didn't seem like he was Spock at points.
Well, and I think
I'm not so much a fan of Mr. Siler.
I thought his Spock was all right. I mean, the concept the concept that they were going for is saying, okay, well, this is a different universe. This is an alternate reality. So I think if they're going to go down that road, they're going to say, well, all of these characters have the same names, but they're slightly different because, you know, they're from a different reality.
Well, sure, and I can accept that, but that's not really the end of the problems now, is it?
No, well, no, no.
The problem with this movie for me is that it completely supplants the Star Trek universe that we know and have loved for 40 years.
No, it does not completely. Star Trek Enterprise is still valid.
I love Enterprise. Enterprise is still valid. Basically, everything from the point of Captain Kirk's birth going forward, as we know it, never happened.
The ship where Kirk's father was serving did not look at all thematically similar to the old universe stuff. So it seems like the alternate universe might have kicked in at an earlier point.
Well, and my understanding has been, though, that this was designed to be an alternate reality, not altering that continuum, but merely a split-off reality, not unlike the mirror universe.
Well, you know, my problem with it, and it's just that if they would have just chose one direction, either we're doing a reboot, I would have been behind that, or we're doing a sequel. But they chose a sequel and a reboot, in my mind. And that's the problem.
Yeah, and I think they couldn't... I for some reason, I don't think they felt they could sell this film without attaching it to the previous material. Vis-a-vis having Leonard Nimoy show up. And without having it be a crossover universe, they didn't have a reason for him to be there.
Yeah, and I just want to say this while we're talking. I don't think I've ever watched anything that J.J. Abrams has ever done that I think is worth a damn.
Yeah, you might be onto something there.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of people that do, that, you know, love his stuff, but I can't say I've ever been...
A lot of people love Joss Whedon, too.
I like Joss Whedon.
I like Joss Whedon.
Don't get me started.
So, I can take or leave him.
But,
he doesn't actively offend my sensibilities, but I'm not going out of my way to watch his stuff either.
Right. Right. So final thing on Star Trek, I mean, I don't know if we're going to close it off, but like my thing is, if you want to take it as a standalone movie, and if you can ignore everything that came before it, it's not a bad romp. I don't think it fits into the established mythos very well.
I guess if you see it as not a Star Trek movie, then yeah, I guess it's not bad.
I mean, it was fun and enjoyable. It totally was not a Star Trek film.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Chris Triplett, let me ask you, are you a Star Trek fan existingly?
Oh, yeah. You could say that.
Okay. Well, yeah. See, now, what I was thinking was that most of us are showing our problems with this because we have been longtime Star Trek fans, and it's just wrong.
Yeah, I can see that, but, like, you know, still going back to it, I would have been fine if it would just been a total reboot. Everything's different, a new direction. Just do it. See what happens. But again, you know, if you're trying to get both audiences, and that's where it messes up. It can't decide which audience it wants. Does it want your hardcore Star Trek fans, or does it want your new fans that are just going to want something different? And I don't know.
As a start of maybe a new series of movies, it's a good introduction for the new fans, but it can also draw in the older fans with Spock Prime part of it, and then go off in its own direction for the next movie. Except, I don't know if they're even planning to do another one.
I think they are.
Oh, they have to be. It makes so much money.
I think they are, yeah.
I mean, this is the de facto Star Trek. You know, of all the people listening, everyone's going to love this, and they're going to say, this is a bunch of crap, because these nerds are just bitching about Star Trek. But you know what? There's a reason we're bitching. It's because this movie, in my estimation, is now the de facto universe. You can say, oh, yeah, the Next Generation universe as we knew it. It still exists out there somewhere. But you know
what? On WGN.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I don't like this direction. I don't like the fact that it's going to be the Star Trek universe that runs through the perpetuity of time until something changes and either makes a clear delineation between the two universes or completely undoes this universe and goes back to the next gen timeline, because next gen didn't happen. DS9, Voyager, none of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Next Generation still probably happens. But
it happens differently.
It just happens differently. Yeah, I mean, who knows?
And I honestly, if Star Trek, how is it that in this completely divergent timeline, everyone just happens to coalesce back around the Enterprise? Why is it that Captain Kirk, you know, joined Starfleet? Yes, I know they explained it in the film. But why is it that Kirk joined Starfleet? Why is it that Spock joined Starfleet? Why is it that Bones joined Starfleet? It's just too coincidental.
I'm not too worried about that, though, because they've already established, like, that at least has been established, because that the same thing happened in the Mirror Universe. So
the Mirror Universe is closely bound to the, in some mystical, unspoken way, it's bound to the, I guess, 617 or whatever universe you want to call it. And yeah, I guess you could say that it's the same mechanism that does that, but still, I mean, it's really unsatisfying to say those two universes are bound. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying it's already, it's established that those two universes are very similar. So it's not, I'm just saying it's not a huge stretch to say that this alternate universe would be similar as well.
Yeah, because like when you got into Deep Space Nine, the Mirror Universe, it really was not like our universe at all, was there? I mean,
it started to diverge, yeah.
It's pretty different when you look at it.
Well, I mean, the fact that Vic Fontaine was a real person.
That's what I was thinking
of. Yeah, that was awesome.
That was Vic some Fontaine. Crazy stuff.
Vic Fontaine's fantastic. Okay, let's kill that because Paramount's killed Star Trek. Comic fans, who here is reading Blackest Night?
Oh, yes.
Chris.
What do you guys think?
I'm enjoying it. There's a little bit of disappointment, but I think it was going to be there because, like we've been talking before, they've been building on this thing for, like, what, like 2 years or something, so there's, like, no way it's going to live up to everybody's expectations. But I'm reading it first whenever an issue comes out, so they must be doing something right.
I'm really digging it, but I'm a sucker for heavy thematic elements, so I'm really getting into all of the color spectrums and looking at the interactions of those in particular emotions and seeing how they butt up against the other emotional spectrum colors. So I like it so far. I think the art has been really nice, and I think the story is progressing in such a way that you're getting just the little bits and pieces, and it's keeping me interested, you know, especially like where Titans 1 left off. Definitely ready for the next issue of that already. So
everyone loves Hawk and Dove. Chris and I were at a DC Comics fan panel back in June, and it really does seem that the fans are into Blackest Night, and they're really into the color spectrum. While you said that you like the thematic, you like the heavy theme of Blackest Night, to me it just seems like it's overkill. It's almost like you're stretching to explain the Blue Lanterns and the Orange Lanterns. I could live with the Red Lanterns, the Black Lanterns, the Green Lanterns, and the Yellow Lanterns. And, you know, just for old time's sake, throw the Star Sapphires in there. But the Blue Lanterns, the Orange Lanterns, that's just a little too much, and we'll probably end up, by the time this is over, having White Lanterns.
Sometimes it is too much, and I think that's part of the problems. But then, you know, going with what JD said, I really have enjoyed some of the story, like the tales of the core is kind of like a side book that went with it. Those were really interesting stories of getting like some information, some backgrounds on the Blue Lanterns. I really liked that story. That was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those have been nice as far as filling in the blanks. And I think, some of it is sort of a stretch, I guess, if you know, to say. I mean, you do have to kind of fill in, and you don't have enough time, at least in the introductory, to dig into every element. But I think those are legitimate emotions, and I think it's interesting to see the interactions between the different types of emotions, just because, you know, I have a little bit of an acting background, so I sort of approach everything from that direction. And you have active, conscious emotions, and then you have sort of willed motions, or you have conscious emotions. So for example, like fear and love, you could almost say are inactive or are involuntary emotions. And they kind of touched on that a little bit in Green Lantern 45, where you're showing the Yellow Lanterns and the Sapphire Lanterns, you know, butting up against each other. So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting.
The interaction between Carol Ferris and Sinestro I thought was kind of interesting. I don't have like the deepest Green Lantern pedigree. You'll find most of my knowledge of Green Lantern really extends basically everything from going from Emerald Twilight and forward. Since then, I've probably read every single standalone Green Lantern issue, and I've missed probably a dozen issues of GL Corps. But I really wasn't aware that there was like an existing like knowledge that or experience, you know, common experience that Sinestro and Carol Ferris had. I mean, it's certainly understandable that their paths would cross, but he seemed to have intimate knowledge of her and how she felt, and I guess she really seemed to have sort of the same thing with him. Mm-hmm. And it was just sort of interesting seeing that. Since Geoff Johns has taken on Green Lantern with Green Lantern Rebirth and going forward, he's really done an interesting, I'm not going to say good, I mean, I am a huge Geoff Johns nerd, I'll admit. It hardly does he write anything that I don't dig. But he's done an interesting job sort of giving a humanity, I guess, to Sinestro, giving like an actual human aspect and building sort of this relationship that he and Hal Jordan had. And he really, I guess, expanded on it a little, even more in GL45, which came out yesterday.
Yeah, it came out Wednesday. Yeah, I like that he's just not the one-dimensional villain anymore. I like that
he's actually, totally one.
I mean,
yeah,
he's just way, like, you know, with the new issue of Green Lantern, you've gotten more information about his background and just things to just kind of like expand on, like I think there's like a relationship he had with Abin Sur's
sister.
Yes, like. Yes.
It's just deepening the character even more, and I'm wanting to know what's going to happen.
I just assume he didn't have a dick under there, so I mean that's kind of interesting. I mean, really.
Well, you know, if you're reading Green Lantern Corps, you know that's probably not true, Brian.
I don't read GL Corps. I haven't read it since.
So you're missing a piece of the puzzle then, sir.
Oh, yeah. There's a big piece of the puzzle.
Big piece of the puzzle you're missing. Puzzle,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll catch up on that. So, as far as tie-ins go, the only one that I read that I really dug, even though it did nothing spectacular, was Superman Blackest Night. And that's really mostly due to James Robinson, because I think James Robinson is great. And I'm really interested in seeing what happens there. The fact that they pulled Kal-El from the Golden Age Superman that died at the end of Infinite Crisis, I'm really interested to seeing, you know, what goes on there. The fact that they're pulling all these dead DC superheroes like Aquaman and like Martian Manhunter, while part of me really thinks that it's kind of regrettable, because those characters have meant a lot to me. In a fictional universe, those characters mean absolutely more to the heroes involved. And when you look at it that way, it's kind of cool that they're using the Black Lanterns are using the friends and the, you know, comrades against the heroes of the DC universe. So, but I really am interested in seeing what happens in the Superman story. And I guess to a lesser extent, I'm not like a big Hawk and Dove fan. In fact, I wouldn't consider myself a Hawk and Dove fan at all, but the first issue of Titans was pretty good, and I guess the stuff with Tara, that was interesting.
Well, I haven't read it yet, honestly. I'm behind on that. So.
Oh,
I'm
like, sorry.
Well, oh. No, that's okay. Spoil it for me. I'm totally cool with it. I'll eventually read it. But to go back to the Superman special you're talking about, I think this might be the first case where I actually did not care for an issue of Blackest Night that much. I mean, it just, I don't know, it's like we've been getting like Blackest Night Batman, and we've been getting
didn't care for that.
Well, I kind of liked it, but then
I didn't.
But then when Superman came in, I was like, wow, this is just the same thing over again. I'm sure Titans maybe the same thing over again. I'm not sure. I'll have to read it.
I mean, I disagree. I mean, like I said, I felt the other way. I thought the Batman Blackest Night was sort of the throwaway, but the Superman, I thought the art in that was really nice, and I thought it captured the story well.
Yeah, the art was fine. It's just, I think, And I don't know how far we want to spoil it or anything, but the ending...
Spoil
was,
away.
The ending was just kind of... I don't know. When Lois showed up, I was like, oh, really?
Okay. let's sort of diverge. Did you read Flash Rebirth number 4?
Yes, I read that.
Okay. Just a little bit of prep for everyone out there. Barry Allen should stay dead. Barry Allen has done nothing for the DC Universe except for die at the end of Crisis on Infinite Earths. I don't care at all for Barry Allen, and I'm hoping that at the end of Flash Rebirth that he stays dead. But I do have to say, I really thought I was going to hate issue 4 of Flash Rebirth because they teased it that Zoom was going to kill Linda West, Wally's wife. But instead, the most awesome thing that could have happened, possibly happened, we had the return of Max Mercury. Oh, Chris, you've got to love that too. I know you love the Flash as much as I do.
Max Mercury showing up again and looking like he's ready to kick Professor Zoom's butt's awesome and all. But again,
Liberty Bell, she's just
yeah, Liberty Bell. But again, you know, I didn't care for Flash Rebirth number 4 that much. I'm the strange person today, I guess.
See, I thought I was going to hate it because I really... It's almost insulting to me to bring Barry Allen back because the writers, Mark Waid's especially, and Geoff Johns really did a lot to push Wally West forward. Wally West is the Flash, and he deserves the mantle of the Flash. Other than being, you know, other than being the Flash prior to Wally, Barry's done nothing. He's boring. He's a flat character. I could care less. Like I said, it's almost insulting to me that they would try to supplant Wally, who has earned, you know, in a strange way, the mantle of being the Flash.
Well, I see what you're saying, but the way I see it is, look at where they've taken Wally West, where he's at now. He's basically in the Spider-Man situation. You know,
yes,
he's
I would agree.
He's got kids. I mean, that's great. You know, that's a cool situation for him to be in. But if you're wanting that new reader, I mean, you don't want. I mean, he's got this history, this baggage of stories that you're gonna have to probably read to understand what's going on currently with him. But with Barry Allen, you can kind of start over. It's the exact same thing as Rebirth.
So you're saying the writers have pissed away Wally West, and we're starting scratch.
I think that's what they're doing. I mean, because it makes sense. I mean, I know you can say, well, Barry Allen, he was around for who knows how many years, and there's a huge amount of background for him. But if you read Flash Rebirth, everything feels like we're starting over.
Yeah, it does. And I, you know, honestly, I really didn't want DC to bring back Hal Jordan because, again, I thought that Kyle Rayner earned the mantle of Green Lantern, and I thought he was ultimately more interesting than Hal Jordan. But, you know, I can totally concede, you know, Hal Jordan being the Green Lantern because, you know, at least he was interesting. There was, you know, a decade of interesting Hal Jordan stories, I guess primarily the 70s. But Barry Allen, I don't know that I've ever read a Barry Allen story that hooked me in any way whatsoever.
Yeah,
because
again,
of Barry Allen,
he dies in Crisis. You know, that's the story I like. You know, that's about it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go ahead, skip that. Go to the next story. District 9. Who here saw District 9?
Me, Chris. I saw it.
And I saw it. So is that it? You guys didn't see District 9?
I bet they sell the commercials.
I haven't.
I didn't.
I haven't.
Okay. You really didn't miss much.
I wouldn't say that.
It's not bad. It's really not bad.
It's not bad. It is not at all what I thought it was going to be, which is interesting. I thought it was a good movie. I've recommended it to a few people, but again, it's not the end-all, be-all summer movie that you're going to want to see.
Watching it in context of it being like the aborted Halo movie, it's interesting because of, you know, the sort of settings, the design and everything. I can totally see it being the Halo 2 movie. But the movie itself, John, we got into this a little bit in RFC, Radio Free Cybertron, this week. John put it well. He liked the parts, but not necessarily the whole. It's meticulously crafted. Let me re-enunciate that. Meticulously. Every piece is laid out exactly where the director wanted it to be placed. But my problem with it is that it seems kind of sterile. It doesn't seem to have a lot of heart. And there's no characters to root for. Christopher and his son are the only real characters that you can sort of feel compassion for. And, like, you know, most of the critics are saying they look like crab cockroaches. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to, you know, attach yourself to them. But the main character of the film, he's reprehensible. I mean, he's basically, I mean, he's not the Hitler of the aliens, but he's basically almost like a Nazi foot soldier. His job is to kick them out of the ghetto, to put them into a government, you know, camp, and he happens to get this goo on him that turns him into one of the crab cockroaches, and we're supposed to feel sorry for him because of that.
I know, like, the scene where he's they're serving the notices to everybody in District 9, and he gets to Christopher's house, and the scene where he sees his son, and he wants to get into the house, or he wants him to sign the paper, I think is what it is, and he uses his son to get into the house and to get
for leverage.
Yeah, for leverage. Like, well, if you're not going to let us do this, then we're going to get social services down here. They're going to have to take your kid. I mean, this isn't a proper place for a child to be living. I mean, look at this. This is dangerous. That's when I decided that, yeah, this is a slimy character.
Yeah, and he's not likable whatsoever. He's an idiot. I mean, you know.
I mean, they play him off as an idiot pretty much from the
beginning. My uncle's an idiot, and he's a good guy, but, you know, I don't want to go see a movie about an idiot that I don't like.
But what I did like about it is that he is this horrible character, this horrible person, and they do try to build him up like he can sort of be redeemed. It doesn't go through perfectly, I guess, like they want it to. But there is a moment where you can see the character trying to redeem himself for some of the things he's done.
We're all Transformers fans here, and this is kind of like a rundown of the summer movies. What did you all think about Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen? JD, you start that one out.
I liked it. I've been a fan of the movie universe to date, and I think, like, I look at it from this is a new universe, just like all of the previous new universes that have been established. And I look at it as the explosions and TNA version of universe of Transformers. So, you know, I just go in, I don't think about it too much. I enjoy the references to existing Transformers material, and I walk out happy. As does my wife, who's pretty picky about movies, so.
Okay, now, two things for me were really fun about Revenge of the Fallen. First was the group of people I went to see it with, which is probably not the most glowing recommendation for a movie. The second thing was Jetfire.
Jetfire was awesome.
Yeah, right. My favorite new character.
And then he died.
Yeah.
Only to have his stinky, stinky corpse worn by Optimus Prime and then just casually discarded when he was done with it.
Yeah, then shuffled off like so much trash. Yes.
I never even thought of it like that.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Oh my gosh.
Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen. Is the Fallen a memorable villain in any way?
I forgot about him.
Well, Tony Todd does his voice. That was memorable.
I mean, I guess
I like
in the sense that
as a Star
he was
Trek
a
fan.
Yeah.
I think to the extent that you can say that he was the puppet master. He wasn't present, you know, front and center for most of the film, and I think that one of the plot elements that got put by the wayside was merely telling us that only a Prime can kill the Fallen, and they didn't show the Fallen really, you know, dominating a lot of people and getting to that point where we really thought it was all over before Prime, you know, jumped in and saved the day. So, yes, in a sort of ethereal way, it worked, but I think you're right. I don't think it showed up on screen.
Well, my opinion on the movie, and this is just going to be my opinion of if I liked it or not, and I liked it. But yeah, it's not a good movie, but it's not even in really.
It's a movie.
It's a movie. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there are story problems.
My problem with it is, yeah, there's some story issues. My biggest problem with it is, like Brian has gone into detail before, pacing, because when we first saw it, I was like ready to leave and 40 minutes before the movie even ended, and that's pretty sad. But I don't think it's as bad as the critics made it out to be, because it was...
They had a field day with that.
It was like a scapegoat. It's like, here's this movie we can just write the worst possible critical review about, and nobody's going to question it because everybody thinks it's bad.
I've watched worse movies. I've been in worse movies. And, I mean, there are worse movies out there.
G.I. Joe says hello.
Hannibal.
Yes. Yeah. So, but...
Hannibal. All of you.
Yeah.
I almost walked out of Hannibal, but...
I wanted to walk out of Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen.
No, I didn't. I didn't think it was that bad. I think it was like, here's the part I don't like. Got to get through it. This part's a little bit better. Hey, look, pretty special effects.
I'm joking. Right. I'm joking.
It was a special effects bonanza, but there was no story to back it up.
Right. It's a popcorn movie, and there's nothing wrong with it being a popcorn movie. It can be fun.
Optimus Prime being launched out of a plane was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally...
On the other hand, there was Give Me Your Face.
Dude, Give Me Your Face. I was also going to say that was awesome, too.
Yes.
JD and I are actually...
I rise, you fall.
Oh, God. JD and I are working on a fan commentary to Transformers 2007. And I think we're going to follow up with, as soon as it's out on DVD, a commentary on Revenge of the Fallen. And I can guarantee you that Give Me Your Face will feature heavily in the commentary. Because, I mean, that's... probably the single most memorable line from the movie.
That's probably going to be a drinking game, isn't it?
Well, I mean, he only says it once.
I mean, like, people doing the comments here, whenever they say, give me your face, you take a drink.
Yes, Chris.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Chris.
I don't think that's how drinking games work.
Chris doesn't drink. Chris drinks as much as I do.
Yeah, my knowledge of alcohol has been revealed.
My knowledge of alcohol is actually pretty extensive. I just choose not to drink it.
I quote my father. I quote my father when I asked him if he ever played drinking games when he was growing up. He said, no, son, I always took drinking very seriously.
Yeah, okay. So basically my total take on the movie is that, like Chris said, the pacing's poor. Kind of like this podcast. I was bored with it.
Ouch.
I'm kidding. I was bored with it about 30, 45 minutes before the thing ended. Characters that did not need to come back from the first movie came back in inexplicable ways and for basically no reason whatsoever. There were too many sight gags. It was too sexualized. And the pretender chick with the robotic tongue, I really, really hated that. And
There was one other thing, too. I'm standing directly beneath the enemy's testicles.
Yes.
Could we have possibly done without that?
Oh.
Yeah.
Come on. That's hilarious.
Yeah, that makes me want to laugh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to throw in the last thing I'll throw in that, despite all of those things, it will be the number one movie of 2009. So.
Yeah, so whatever
you
think
will,
doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay.
People applauded at the end of that movie, and I screamed out like this series of expletives, and I got like the meanest looks. There's this dude, I enjoyed watching him more than the movie. Whenever Optimus Prime would do something, he would stand up and shake his fists, and I guess it was some sort of rudimentary form of approval of what Optimus Prime was doing. I don't know. But that was actually pretty fun, but the movie itself, not so much. Yeah. Batman Arkham Asylum, that's out now on the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. It's getting rave reviews. I read... one website that said it may be the game of 2009. I've not played it, but I know that Chris and JD have. What are your thoughts, gentlemen?
Why don't you go ahead first, JD, since you've been playing the demo.
Yeah, I played the demo. Absolutely loved the demo as far as being an introduction to the game. I think it's interesting. The combat system, I mean, just as the preliminary, like the first time through, was a little rough. The second time I got used to it, so it actually improved upon play. But I really, really dug the detective mode. I think it's a really innovative feature for a Batman game.
Batman's detective button is on 24/7, people. I don't understand the need for a detective button.
Well, what to touch on that, actually, you could probably just leave that on throughout the entire game, which I've been leaving it on for a good portion of the game, actually.
Yeah,
What does that do, that detective mode?
What it does is, I mean, you know, normally when you're in a game, all you see is the world as it would appear through your eyes. When you switch to detective mode, it strips the textures down. It highlights certain important elements. So if there's, say, something that you can grapple to, that will be highlighted. If there's an object you need to look at or something that you can interact with, that will be highlighted. If there's a person, instead of actually seeing that person, you'll see their skeleton. You can see their heart rate, their current emotional state. In some situations, you'll be able to tell if they're armed or what they're armed with. So it gives you a lot of information about the environment that you wouldn't be able to discern just by looking at it.
So it makes Batman into the guy from Psych.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, thank you. I understand now.
Awesome. But it's really I've enjoyed it so far from playing the full game. I picked up the game on Tuesday, I think, is when it came out. And I'd heard things about it before it came out, just kind of, you know, picking up stuff on some websites and everything, but it just kind of like, you know, took me by surprise when the demo hit PlayStation Network and I downloaded it and tried it out. I was like, wow, this is not too bad. And then it's like everything's been just, you know, downhill from there. It's just been, well, not downhill. It's just been really pretty good. I've enjoyed it a lot.
So did you download the add-on? Have you downloaded the DLC from PlayStation Network?
Yes, I have. And that's kind of strange because when you like, saw commercials or heard information about the Joker as a playable character exclusively on the PlayStation 3, I was thinking, well, he's going to be in the game. You know, he'll actually be something on the disc or something. But you have to go on to PlayStation Network and download it. It's about a 100 megabyte file.
What Chris is complaining about is he hates DLC. That's basically just an unlock code. Yeah. When you have something on the disc that you're already paying for, but you have to pay money to unlock. And
Street Fighter 4 costumes say hello.
Yeah. That joke says hello.
I hate that stupid unlock code for those costumes. It's awful.
But I was going to ask you, Chris, while you take a drink of that delicious Pepsi throwback, 150 calories of sin per can. How does this compare to other Batman games? I mean, there have been some good Batman games in the past.
Well, I don't know. When you say good, what are you saying is good in the past?
Like, you know, actually, OneUp.com did a really good study of the Batman games that have, you know, come before. And while each game, there were a lot of clunkers, but there were also a lot of good games mm-hmm. that were basically as good as the system would allow. Like, go back to Batman Return of the Joker, the follow-up to the Batman movie game that Sunsoft did. That was a really good game.
Was that NES?
Yes, that was NES. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, it doesn't compare to the new game because of technological differences. Mm-hmm. But it in its own right, it was a good game.
Whenever I hear people talking about, like, past Batman games, I hear a lot of reference to, I think it's Adventures of Batman and Robin on SNES. I hear people saying that before now that was actually the best game, but I haven't played it, so I can't confirm or deny it.
They also talked about the Adventures of Batman and Robin on the Sega CD, which included Batman the Animated Series animation as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, it's like almost a full episode's worth. You could probably find a torrent where someone has put those videos together, and it kind of makes a semi-coherent story, kind of like Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen.
Mm-hmm. It seems like the last Batman game that I played might have been, I think it was Batman Vengeance. Is that the name of it? Kind of a 3D game. It was a PlayStation 2 era. I guess it would have been on Xbox and GameCube
was
also.
Was that the game after or before Sensu?
Before. I never played that Sensu, whatever that was. But this is the one where they tried to get the Batman animated series crowd. Because it kind of had sort of an animated style look to it. And this is where they started featuring, like, the voice actors. Like, Mark Hamill was in it for the Joker, at least. Maybe Kevin Conroy was in it. And it seemed like it was going in the right direction, but it was so clunky. It was hard to play, and it kind of killed it. But it's like I rented it. I think I didn't even finish it. But, like, with the new game, they're sort of doing the same thing. It's like they're doing the same trick again. They're trying to get that crowd of people that are fans of the Bruce Timm kind of animated stuff. But it really works. I mean, they're taking, I think, what we really enjoy about the characters in animated series, but they're taking the Batman comic roots. Like, I'm at the point in the game where I guess it's in the demo also, where Batman is communicating with Oracle. Which,
seriously?
Oh, yeah, which, obviously, they never focus too much on her, Batgirl, Barbara Gordon becoming Oracle in the animated series. So it's interesting. I mean, I don't want to go into too much detail because I know you guys haven't played, like, the full game, and you might be interested in picking it up or playing it, so I don't want to spoil it for you. But there's just been some really good stuff that's happened in the game. I've played it about 4 or 5 hours, maybe, total. I think I fought, like, one boss, too, which is strange. It seems like it's really long.
Who's the boss?
I fought Bane.
Oh.
It was actually pretty interesting.
Bane.
Well, it's Bane, But it's Bane from the comic, not Bane from Batman the Animated Series.
Bane from the Animated Series is better.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Bane from the comic sucks, dude.
Dude, Bane from the comic was, like, Kingpin or something for Batman. He was the criminal... Mm-hmm. Empire guy.
Yeah.
Bane in the animated series was just
some muscle dude. I know.
Some big muscle dude.
I know. But you know what? I've never read anything with Bane in the comic that I thought was remotely interesting, except for Nightfall. Nightfall excluded.
Well, I think that Bane in the comics may have worked better if you just wouldn't have had, like, what's his name? Azrael come back and just beat him so badly.
Batman 500.
I think that
die-cast cover.
That destroyed
fantastic.
The character.
Bane was also awesome in Batman Beyond.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
I don't know about that.
He was decrepit.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
no, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a good idea, but, again, I don't know.
Okay, moving along. On RFC, New Sound Wave, we decided that we were going to talk about many different things: science fiction, comic books, toys, animation, Transformers, G.I. Joe, all that stuff. I swore off Masters of the Universe after the 2002 series. Yeah, I know it was good. Yeah, the toys, the Four Horsemen toys, they looked good. But for the most part, they were crap. Yeah, I bought a good chunk of them. Actually, I may have bought all of them, more or less, when they came out. But I pretty much swore Masters of the Universe and He-Man off. Then this jerk here, Chris, told me about Maddie Collector having the Masters of the Universe Classics toys. And I looked at it, and I'm like, that basically fixes every problem I had with the Masters of the Universe toy line. Except for the price. They're $20 a pop.
Yeah.
So the first one I got was Man-at-Arms. And it's fantastic. He has two heads. So you get a mustachioed Man-at-Arms, as he appeared in the cartoon, as well as a clean-shaven Man-at-Arms.
What's so cool about that,
what?
Don't you? Because you can buy extras, and you've got, like, the guards for Eternia. Awesome.
Oh, wow, Chris. $20 a pop troop building. That's genius.
I think I saw those, and I think when I first saw it, I said, wow, Burt Reynolds looks great, but
yeah.
John Cena looks terrible.
Yeah. But this week, in the mail, we got Triclops, and, he's not a bad toy. As a kid, I loved Triclops, and I honestly can't tell you why. But he was not one of my favorite toys from the 2002 line. But the new one, he has all the articulation of the other Masters of the Universe toys, except he just kind of has this big bulky, goofy-looking head, and there's really nothing else that's sort of special about him. So he's basically as standard fare as these toys get, which I really guess He-Man would be, too, because he doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's so awesome about Man-at-Arms is, like, that armor is, like, super detailed.
It's super detailed, yeah.
All those extra features, and like you said, he has an extra head. And you didn't even mention that he comes with like a revised version of the 2002 He-Man sword.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Which is really cool. That was like the selling point for me. I was like, wow, they just put the detail
There's a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah,
you get a detailed figure that's poseable, which we've never gotten before in the Masters of the Universe toy line. Never.
Right.
And I mean, it's Man at Arms to boot. He's just awesome.
Yeah, he's a great character.
And then comes Triclops, and I'm holding Triclops in my left hand now. And he's evil and sees everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's not bad looking. It's just like you kind of hit the point before is that, you know, he's just kind of bland because when you go back to it, what was He-Man about? He-Man in the old series, the 80s series, was one body designed to be like what, like 50 figures or 100? I don't know how many of those things they made. And that's what they're still doing. And I guess, like, your hardcore He-Man fans probably think that's awesome. But when you look at this...
The crazies?
I'm not going to say that. No comments.
I've had, over the years, in my nerddom, I've had some clashes with He-Man fans, and I don't mind saying crazies.
Yeah, but I'm not going to say that. You know, it's putting them in a box, and I'm not going to put them in that box.
Set that box on fire.
And stomp on it.
Yeah.
But I like Triclops for what he is. These figures are pricey, and at $20,
$28.72 shipped.
Yeah, that's like almost $30 for shipping. Also,
I could buy a hooker for that.
Well, it's not going to be a good hooker.
Yeah, that's true. Used up hooker.
But for what you get, hey, it's Triclops. It's like Brian says, he sees he's evil and he sees things.
while he's basic, I was looking at Merman and honestly thinking about paying $35 on eBay for Merman. He has a different body, though.
He has two heads also.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, Merman. Maybe Beastman.
I don't know about Beastman, but there's a few that I desperately want a He-Man and a Skeletor, so when those reissues come out, I need to jump on
those. Those are improved, too. They have new paint apps, and I know Skeletor's hand's fixed.
Cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was broken.
Yeah, it's kind of a limp grip, kind of like George Bush. Yeah, I mean, the new Masters of the Universe line, they basically have a base expectation of what you're going to get out of a toy, and this is pretty much it. There's really nothing special about it, but if you're like a rabid Triclops fan...
Well, here's a radical thing. Look at the figure and tell me this. If he was in the stores right now selling for about $9-$10, would you like him better?
Honestly, Chris, no. No, I think you just hit on a point. It's the fact that he's an exclusive and he's hard to come by is the reason I bought it.
Yeah, but he didn't sell out for a while, though, did he?
No, I think he sold out Monday. They come out on Friday, or no, they come out on the 15th.
I think it's usually like on a Monday or Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah, but he was out the next week. Yeah, honestly, if he was on the shelf, I wouldn't buy him. But the fact that he was exclusive, and I knew that if I didn't jump on him, I wouldn't get him, that was the reason I bought it.
Yeah.
Man, I'm a sucker.
Yes,
yeah, kind of.
And sitting back here, I see Activator's Grimlock, who is awesome. And he sat on the shelf for the longest time, and I didn't pick him up. And he was $7.
I tried to tell you.
And he's awesome. $7 of awesome.
They are really expensive toys. That's why I didn't buy a lot of the Activators. I mean, the idea is cool, but in these bleak economic times, you know, $7-$8 is a lot for a small figure.
I think the Activator toys, the ones that I've got, except for Bulkhead, are actually better than all the larger versions of the toys.
I really like...
The only Activator I have is the Bumblebee that came with my Purple Shockwave, and yeah, it's a pretty cool toy, but I can't see paying $7 or $8 each for those. They're so little.
Yeah, especially when, you know, Walmart had the deluxes for $7.77. It was kind of a stretch.
Yeah.
But I still prefer it to the deluxe Bumblebee. I think that's kind of a loathsome toy.
Am I the lone voice of reason here when I say that I like deluxe Bumblebee?
Probably.
Okay.
I say so.
Yeah, he's not a very good toy.
I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm, like, missing something when I look at him, but I don't know. I like that toy. I don't know what it is.
Oh, we all have a toy like that.
But I guess I'm biased.
Optimus Minor.
I love me some animated.
Oh yeah, well, we can all agree there that animated is
the toys. Yeah.
So yeah, animated's the best Transformers that we've ever had. If you love Transformers and you've never watched animated, do yourself a favor, because animated is arguably the best Transformers that we've ever got. And if it's not animated, it's Beast Wars, which I know a bunch of you didn't pay attention to. And I just want to sort of segue using that, as we can most of us agree that animated's the best Transformers ever. Chris and I are reading something that we think's also the best representation of the comic in our lifetimes, which is Amazing Spider-Man, Brand New Day. The hardcore crazy fans hate it. I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't get that either. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm a hardcore crazy fan. I like it.
Yeah, it's yeah. Hush, Chris. Yeah, I'm on a roll. So, you know, Dan Slott, it's not just Dan Slott. He's not the sole writer of the comic, but he's kind of like the go-to guy as far as like the big stuff goes now. But Dan Slott's stuff is great. Mark Waid's stuff is great. Joe Kelly jumped on. Joe Kelly's a great writer. So you have Dan Slott, who really made a name for himself in She-Hulk. Mm-hmm. You have Mark Waid, who's a comic book living legend. And Joe Kelly, who sort of disappeared, came off the radar for a few years, but he's back. And then you have like...
you'll get like Mark Guggenheim show up, yeah, on it. Yeah, I mean, you just get all kinds of different people to come in to write the book. It's interesting.
And always coming back is the greatest Spider-Man comic artist of all time, John Romita Jr. I'm going to say that. JRJR is the best Spider-Man artist ever, and he's probably the best comic artist today.
He might be my favorite. I mean, because he's... I really like his art, and I really like him on Spider-Man.
You like Eric Larson, too, though.
I'm sorry?
Yeah,
I like Eric Larson. You know, Eric Larson...
He's a sentimental favorite.
He's good. I mean, I like him. There's nothing wrong with Eric Larson.
He's better than Todd McFarlane.
I don't know. You might tick some people off if you say that. But, yeah, John Romita Jr., fantastic. Bring him back. Put him on the book regular. I'd be all...
Kick-Ass is a great comic. I know you've not read Kick-Ass. Kick-Ass is a great comic.
Yeah, I want to read it. I just need to get around to it. Got other stuff I'm reading.
But, yeah, so you have all these top-tier writers writing Spider-Man. You have all these great artists writing Spider-Man. I am not someone who laughs out loud reading something. I literally laugh out loud reading Spider-Man. Seriously, if you're not reading Amazing Spider-Man now, post Brand New Day, read it. Who cares the fact that they did this big, you know, stupid mind wipe thing to ignore all the past several years of Spider-Man comics? Those past several years have been crap. You'll completely forget the JMS run. The JMS run did nothing to push Spider-Man forward. In trying to push Spider-Man forward, JMS just became any old other run where the writer tried to put his mark on the character. JMS really did nothing for Spider-Man. It all, most of it, had to be undone.
Well, I don't think he didn't do anything for it. I think he started getting it going in this direction. I mean, because before JMS, I mean, what was even going on in the book? Can you even remember right before JMS?
That was after... Oh, God, Chris, don't make... okay.
Wait, it's not memorable. That's,
no,
that's the
here's
point.
The, okay, here's the problem with Spider-Man. To make up for... I'll let you jump in a second, JD. Sorry. This is something I'm passionate about.
All right.
Okay, so prior to years ago, we had the Clone Saga. And, yeah, that kind of messed things up. They finally put all that past us. And then the man who reboots comics and fixes everything, John Byrne, came on.
Oh, God.
And did a 12-issue miniseries to reboot and fix Spider-Man. And it really didn't work.
Is Sandman still related to Norman Osborn? I'm not sure.
I don't remember. So then he had this run himself on Amazing Spider-Man that really wasn't memorable. Then they sort of pushed him off, and he started writing Spider-Woman, which I actually kind of dug.
The character wasn't terrible. It's just that they went nowhere with it was the problem.
Yeah. So Spider-Man kind of languished for a while. Then they decided, hey, we're going to put JMS, who wanted to write Superman more than anything. So we said, well, here's the Marvel equivalent. You can write Spider-Man. Then they put J. Scott Campbell covers on every issue, and it sold like hotcakes. But if you go back and reread that stuff, it's okay. It's readable, but it's not memorable. There's really nothing memorable about the JMS run, except for Aunt May finding Peter in his room dressed as Spider-Man and not shitting her pants.
I really liked what they did with Aunt May, though, because I'll always remember the scene. I can't remember what issue number it was, but after she's found out, and I don't think she's told Peter Parker yet that she knows, and she's checking stories on Spider-Man, and then she like sees the story that like the Daily Bugle's put up on Spider-Man, and it's just something, you know, just some more trash that, like Jonah's put on there so he can sell newspapers, and she like immediately. Goes to cancel her subscription.
JJJ. I laugh out loud at the stuff that he does. I wish I hadn't been spoiled that Jonah becomes the mayor of New York. I don't know where I was spoiled. I think it was Wizard. But this is good stuff. Read it. So, JD, now that you've been patient, I'm going to let you speak now.
No, it's kind of it's just an old comment. I was going to say I think that I mean I read the early stuff. Of that run, and I liked it. My thought was that I think that Civil War screwed up Spider-Man more than any of that other stuff had done.
Civil War screwed up a lot of things.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
I think Civil War screwed up Spider-Man so much that is really what made the reboot necessary.
I am a noted, not hater, but someone who dislikes Brian Michael Bendis, and it's amazing that Civil War is something that messed up Marvel that Bendis didn't write.
I'm sure he was like writing stuff that was leading to
probably,
it.
Yeah,
it was probably still one of his ideas, I'd say.
Yeah, let's just blame it on him. We'll retcon it and say, yes, Brian Michael Bendis wrote Civil War and ruined Spider-Man. Thank you, Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah.
No, but Mark Miller, I'm kind of like a Mark Miller, you know, fanboy, kind of like Jeff Johns. To me, they can typically do no evil. But, yeah, the Civil War sucked, and I'm glad it's over. But the repercussions from that god-awful story arc still are being felt today in the Marvel Universe, and hopefully we can get past that. Because DC was able to get past the Identity Crisis eventually, and it was probably more reprehensible than Civil War.
Maybe. I don't know. I really hate Civil War.
Yeah. It was. It is almost like they need to do a system-wide wipe.
There's not
going to
be a Marvel Crisis. That's not going to happen.
We've had that
conversation. We're not going to.
I know, but I'm just saying, like that. It really almost needs to. And I think they were almost trying to do that with Invasion by trying to say that some of those characters, it wasn't really them. You know, it was somebody else. But I don't know if even that is going to go all the way that they need to fix some of the stuff that they messed up.
Marvel doesn't do the same job that DC does when they have, you know, company-wide crossovers. DC, typically, it's a hit. As much as I don't like Identity Crisis, it was popular. I loved Infinite Crisis. I thought Infinite Crisis was handled very well. But then we came to Final Crisis, and Grant Morrison is undeniably a genius. Grant Morrison's a genius, and the great thing about geniuses, when they succeed hugely, and when they fail big. And for the most part, I think Civil War was a big failure. I mean, pardon me, Final Crisis is a big failure for DC. And
I think you were right when you said Civil War was a big failure, but we're talking about Final Crisis, and I'm still not sure what happened in Final Crisis.
Batman died. The only thing to take
did
away.
Did he die? Did he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that leaves us now with Dick Grayson as Batman, and I have to say I don't hate it. I really don't. I thought I would, but I don't.
Yeah, it's strange because I don't like Bucky Barnes as Captain America.
I hate it.
I hate that. But Dick Grayson, it's not terrible.
He's the right. Okay, he is the rightful heir to Batman. I guess that's the thing. If someone was going to become Captain America, it should have been somebody new or Falcon or something.
And it also helps that he wasn't already dead in the storyline, and they had to retcon something to say that he's
alive. There's some bitterness there with me, because Bucky is supposed to be dead. He should have stayed dead. Bringing him back as the Winter Soldier is stupid. I'm sorry. I know it's proven to be a popular story arc, and that people love it, but bringing Bucky back is the equivalent of bringing Uncle Ben back and making him the Punisher.
I don't know. You know, I'd read that.
Yeah, I would too, honestly. But Final Crisis, killing Batman, and then putting Dick Grayson in the cowl, it doesn't read like Batman, and DC has fallen, editorially, DC needs to get tighten in the reins a little bit, because one of the Bat books, he's a little too whiny. Oh, I'm not Batman. I'm not Bruce. How am I going to do this?
Is that the regular Batman book?
Yeah. Then in the other, he's kind of hardcore and he's solid and he knows what he wants to do. And really, at what Dick Grayson's gone through in his life, he should really be pretty confident. He shouldn't be a mirror image of Batman, but he shouldn't worry that he's not up to the task.
Well, this kind of gets...
The one book is where his mood elevator just kicked in.
Yeah.
What I'd like to touch on a little bit, though, is like Grant Morrison, he's kind of the... I guess he's the driving force of the Batman books right now.
I would say so.
So with the new book, the Batman and Robin book, him and Frank Quitely.
Frank Quitely. Got the poster right here.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. The character it's now Robin,
Damian.
Damian, which is he's Bruce Wayne's son, and I like that character a lot, but I hate it when anybody else writes him other than Grant Morrison. I don't know what it is about it. It's like they turn him into this whiny, bratty character, but whenever he writes him, it's like, yeah, he's whiny and bratty, but he will also cut your throat if you get near him.
Yeah, Grant Morrison, he writes him really well. I guess he kind of writes him as like this sort of crotchety, pissed off, little hungry cat who wants to just sort of get ahead.
I don't know what it is. I can't really pin it, but it's just the attitude. And it's not just the art that Frank Quitely does, because I could see it before... when the character was introduced, before they did the Batman RIP storyline, you could still see it, and that was a totally different artist. It's just whenever anybody else writes the character, he just comes off as a terrible character for me. But
like when Judd Winnick writes him.
Yes, specifically Judd Winnick. I don't know, maybe he just doesn't get
it. Judd Winnick's a good writer.
He's a great writer. I really like his stuff. But yeah, like Dick, like we were talking about before, Dick Grayson's now Batman. If DC wants to keep him as Batman for the next year or even longer, I got no problem with it.
I can stand him being Batman for a couple years.
I mean, he could stay Batman for a while. I mean, as long as they don't get just heavily gimmicky and crazy with it, yeah.
As long as they don't push it like they did with Kyle Rayner. I mean, I love Kyle Rayner, and Kyle Rayner to me was Green Lantern, but Kyle Rayner was Green Lantern for 13, 14 years.
Yeah.
12, 13 years. So as long as this doesn't last more than a couple of years and Bruce comes back, you know, I'll be okay with it. I mean, it's not like with Azrael was Batman. Everyone hated that.
It caused me to drop the book.
And Chris, you know, Chris...
I love Batman.
Chris loves Batman. Chris has a Batman tattoo.
No, I don't.
No, he doesn't. Now that we sort of stroked our comic gland, let's go... Sorry. Let's go ahead and get our...
That sounded really horrible.
It was really horrible. So let's go ahead and wrap things up with our favorite topic. I guess the one we were holding off on, the one that wouldn't die, G.I. Joe. XV, that's your call. You love this movie.
Oh, sure. No, okay. I should start out that I'm not really a G.I. Joe fan. You know, I've watched the CGI movies. I watched Resolute. And I saw some of Sigma Six, but I didn't buy the toys or pay that much attention to it.
I wanted to die.
So I'm pretty much going in the movie fresh, and I thought it was a lot of fun. It's a good way to introduce people into G.I. Joe, plus the whole chase scene in Paris. That was beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, God, please, please. That I had to close my eyes during that.
Well, I loved that. That was the best part of the movie.
I'll admit that when I saw the trailer for the scene that was going to be in Paris with the accelerator suits, I was like, I don't even know if I want to go see this movie. And I thought that they were going to just overly use that throughout the entire movie. Accelerator suits, accelerator suits, accelerator suits. But
hey, Chris, what do these accelerate?
You. God. But when they dialed it back, when they actually have the scene in the movie, I didn't think it was as bad.
It wasn't as bad as our expectation.
It's nowhere near as bad as my expectation, but still, it was pretty bad. What did you do? Oh, I jumped over it. I jumped through it.
Yeah, that was there were jokes throughout the movie. That was the only one that garnered an intentional laugh at the movie theater, and one dude laughed out of the whole theater. One dude. I was laughing all the way through the movie, but it was unintentionally. There are things, scores of things I didn't like.
I was
cheering
when the Eiffel Tower fell down.
Yeah, I can understand.
But
that's
just my anti-French thing kicking in, you know.
Yeah. Was that an intentional reference to Team America or unintentional?
That had to be unintentional.
Yeah.
Yeah. This really basically was Team America World Police, though, without its tongue sticking out. I mean, G.I. Joe, it wanted to be fun, and it really didn't succeed. It wanted to be action-packed, and it just really kind of came off as hokey.
Yeah.
At least Transformers had awesome special effects. Special effects in this were second rate.
It was like Sci-Fi Channel movie effects, as one of our friends pointed out when we were leaving the theater.
There were computer models that didn't have textures in this movie.
And one thing I noticed, too, when they left the aircraft in the Arctic, you could see how bad the compositing was there.
Yeah. I mean, the movie failed in so many ways. The only thing I dug was sort of like meta things. I really dug Brendan Fraser popping up as Flint because I didn't expect it. But
I guess he's Flint. They don't actually say that.
Yeah, you have to assume he's Flint.
He's the only one that wears a beret.
I hated Storm Shadow. I hated his costume. I hated Snake Eyes' costume. I
mean, what was with the face mask?
I don't know.
As one of our friends tried to say, that was based off his most popular toy, and he was just making this stuff up, pulling it out of his butt as he went.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as I pointed out, Radio Free Cybertron could have been Radio Free G.I. Joe had things gone just ever so slightly differently. I love G.I. Joe, and this is not a good G.I. Joe movie. I really enjoyed the first Transformers movie. I thought it was a decent effort, and I watched it in the theater like three or four times. I've watched it several times since. It's a passable movie, but G.I. Joe just fails in every way imaginable.
You know, I can't wait for G.I. Joe to come out on DVD so I can rent and watch it again.
Oh, God.
You know what I think that the G.I. Joe movie is actually missing, which could have made me enjoy it a whole lot more, is, and I don't know where I heard this from, but somebody made the reference that there's no PSAs in it, no public service announcements.
Yeah.
And I think that when the credits rolled, that would have been the perfect time to play
that.
Been something that I would have just been like, all right, maybe the movie was terrible, but you know, this is pretty
they could
good.
Have scored some points with that, but they didn't even do that. They didn't take the 2 minutes ad lib some stuff.
It could have just been like, you know, stuff that they cut from the movie, like just the actors just kidding around, and it would have been fun. But when I left G.I. Joe, I just decided that I didn't have fun, and that's not
my wife
they
said
go with it.
Yeah, my wife said that her favorite part was leaving. That was her favorite part.
I still think you should get her to watch Resolute and see what she thinks about the movie.
Okay. In that context, it may not be so bad. I'm not a big fan of Resolute. In fact, I would say I'm the anti-fan of Resolute.
Well, I don't hate Resolute. I mean, seriously, I mean, if anybody else out there has seen some of the other stuff they've put out over the last couple of years.
Like Transformers Animated?
No, we're talking about G.I. Joe.
Talking about Hasbro.
The Spy Troops movie, what was it, Valor versus Venom movie, these were pretty terrible, in my opinion.
They're better than Resolute.
I don't know.
But I think the CGI movies were trying to be goofy.
Yeah, but I don't know. They just, I didn't enjoy them. I don't know what it is.
Here's my problem with Resolute. Warren Ellis, again, no doubt that he's a genius. He can write some really brilliant stuff on occasion, but when he fails big, and I feel that this was a big failure. remember, people also really loved the Dreamwave Transformers comic, and it was full of this kind of crap, too. Just adding this really dumb, mature, stupid, slack-jawed edge to Transformers, that's exactly what they tried to do with Resolute, and Resolute also failed. They really can't have a follow-up to Resolute unless they start introducing new characters, because they killed off...
Everybody.
Yeah.
Cobra Commander's still out there somewhere. You know he is.
Yeah. But, okay, hokey ninja bullshit is what we got when Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow fought each other. Hokey ninja bullshit.
Well, wasn't
seriously.
That what was in the comic near the end anyway?
The comic did have a lot of that.
Well, the comics are pretty popular with the, I guess, the hardcore fans, aren't they? I mean, I never read a whole lot.
I don't know
that
the hardcore fans love G.I. Joe Resolute, though. That, I mean, well, we're talking about two different animals.
I'm not talking about Resolute. I'm just talking about, like, you know, the connection of the kind of more gritty, kind of realistic tones to the series. I mean, that's what the comic was, right? I mean, it was a little bit more real to the world than... Hey,
and that's what the hardcore crazies want.
Yeah, the hardcore crazy G.I. Joe fans want it to be more militaristic, not more melodramatic, which is what G.I. Joe Resolute was.
Right.
Yeah, and G.I. Joe Resolute, again, it's a fail.
Why couldn't Sigma 6 have been good? I mean, I would have liked to just have a fun G.I. Joe series with nice animation. I guess that's wishing for too much.
Yeah, it's too much to hope for with G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe is not the cash cow, as of late, that Transformers has been.
Too bad.
Yeah. I think we're done with G.I. Joe. I know that I am.
Yeah, I don't think I want to rub these wounds through salt anymore. It's too much.
I hope the DVD doesn't take too long to get out so I can watch it again.
Yeah, you already said that, XV. So next week, JD, Chris, and I will be back, and we'll be celebrating our inaugural...
Am I not invited back next week?
No, you're not. And I think we're going to call it quits for our very first episode of RFC New Sound Wave. I've been Brian Kilby. With me has been JD Church, XV, and Chris Triplett. You can check us out at tfradio.net. That's where we are for the moment. Tfradio.net. Radio Free Cybertron is available there, as well as, oh God, well, not 9 years worth. Yeah. 4 years worth of archives, sort of sporadically jumping from 1999 to 2009. So check us out, tfradio.net, for Radio Free Cybertron and for RFC New Soundwave. Guys, have you got any closing words?
Watch Animated. It's awesome.
No, watch Beast Wars. It's more awesome.
Yeah, you can watch that too. That's really good also.
Watch me, I'm flying. So check us out next week, RFC New Soundwave, next Thursday, Friday, however long it takes us to get this up. I'm Brian Kilby for the guys. We'll be back next week. Listen to Radio Free Cybertron. It's really important to us, and it's probably going to be better than this. Seriously.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. Talk to you guys next week. Have a good one.
Music by Tim Gourley.
I cannot achieve maximum velocity. Digital heart racing, multiplexing, enumerating. Multi-core processing. Commands conflicting. Deadlock completing. CPU overheating. Singleton desire. A Turing child. Emotions wild. And code compiled. Fault acknowledgeable. Damage considerable. Love unattainable. Digital Pod Racing. Multiplexing. Acknowledgeable. Damage. Considerable.